Welcome to the No Direction Podcast, PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage. Remember, we con when you can't.
We should stop what we're doing and start a panel.
So this is Starfinder versus Pathfinder. Two games enter, one game leaves.
And it's ours.
Yeah.
We did right. It. Good. Thanks for coming out, everybody. Yay.
Bowman was out there. I gave him a chance to come in and defend his game.
Yeah, and he didn't want to?
You know.
Yeah, of course. It's like how's he going to defend it?
It's like a thesis. Defend your game.
Yeah. We have laser guns, so he wouldn't be able to defeat.
Yeah, anyway, he said we had robotic thumbs and he has wizards, so he wins. And I said, yes, but our robotic thumbs can be wizards.
That's true.
I have contempt.
So, I mean, in all seriousness, we love Pathfinder. We play Pathfinder. We're just punchy because it's the end of a 4-day con that we started a day early.
And Starfinder is heavily based on Pathfinder.
But sure
let's introduce ourselves, shall we? Because our name tags are not clear enough. I'm Rob McCrary. I am a senior developer at Paizo, one of Starfinder design leads, and also development lead on the Starfinder Adventure Path.
I am Owen Casey Stevens. I'm a developer at Paizo. I am also one of Starfinder's design leads. And I occasionally write things for Rob for the Adventure Path.
I'm Jason Keeley. My badge says editor, but I've been doing a lot of Starfinder development for a while now, doing a lot of stuff with the Alien Archive, and I also write stuff for Rob's Adventure Path.
And a lot of stuff for Starfinder, too.
And a lot of other stuff for
just
Starfinder.
Just in general.
In general.
So I think we're primarily, I guess this is going to be talking about some of the differences between Pathfinder and Starfinder? Is that what we're doing here today?
Let's start with this. Who here got to play some Starfinder Delve?
Okay.
Who here has no idea what any of the differences between the two games are?
Cool.
All right, so we've run the gamut from people who've played to people who don't know what's going on.
We took the core Pathfinder rulebook and did find and replace path for star, and that was basically
well, and we periodically put the word laser in front of weapons, so we have laser crossbows and laser spike chains.
Find the stars now.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, why don't we, maybe we can start with, like, what one big change between them that we think is interesting or something
sure.
We want to talk about.
So one of the biggest changes that people noticed fairly early on is that we've gotten rid of iterative attacks. By iterative attack, I mean when your base attack bonus goes from +5 to +6, it does not get listed as +6/+1. That is a big part of Pathfinder and how the math of how much damage per round you can do is. We have handled those questions differently in Starfinder. The total amount of damage per round you produce is similar enough for most builds that you can take a Pathfinder monster and put it up against Starfinder people, and you'll get a very similar amount of difficulty killing it. But in Starfinder, everyone simply has the option to take a full attack, which is making two attacks, both at -4. You get this option at first level. So if you've got a gun and you want to fire it twice at first level, you can do that. But that -4 means that you either need to be someone who has put a lot of effort into being good at your gun, or you need to be someone who thinks, well, I'm not likely to hit unless I roll really well anyway, and it's just two chances to hit. Or you just have to live with the fact that you might get lucky once, not lucky once. But if you hit once, that's as good as firing once anyway. So the math is different, but the end result is the same. But that also means you don't have to track at 20th level. We will not have the problem of a 20th level fighter with many shot and rapid fire being hasted and having on his sheet +37, +37, +37, +37, +32, 32, 27, 22, 17. He'll just attack twice, or in the case of a really high-level character, they get the option sometimes to do it 3 or 4 times if they have a special ability, but the number is the same in all cases. So there's a single number you'll keep track of, and if someone gives you a +1 bonus, you don't have to write out 9 +1 bonuses.
Does the BAB still scale?
The actual base attack bonus scales basically the same. Solarians and soldiers get +1 at each level, and all the other classes currently have the +2 per 3 levels. Okay. No one is currently +1 per 2 levels, the wizard progression. That doesn't mean that someday such a class might not come along. But since our spellcasters are both 6-level spellcasters, they have room for the medium attack progression, a couple of good saving throws, a fair number of skills, and other special class features. Because a wizard's class features are, generally speaking, eye cast spells. There are a few things bolted on there, but for the most part, everything he does has to be eye cast spells. We want our technomancers to have more than 2 skill points per level. So we gave them other interesting things.
This is one thing. What's one thing?
Yeah, he asked a question.
I actually have a question.
About your thing.
No, someone asked me this at the Delvo the other day. If someone's got a grenade in each hand, can they Okay.
Absolutely.
Cool.
It's two grenade launchers at minus four. However, if you do not hit the square you're aiming your grenade for, it will bounce.
Oh, sure.
So
yeah,
that
no,
is not... One of our pre-gens has a total attack bonus with their grenade of negative one. And in the game I ran yesterday, the team got used to the idea that they were going to be throwing themselves prone when he threw a grenade, regardless of what he was aiming at.
The insect guy is
minus four.
Yeah, the Sheeran's at minus four.
Yeah. So that is 15 minutes on one interesting thing.
Rob?
Oh, we have a question. We'll take another question.
Maybe I'm getting ahead of us, but can you talk a little bit about why you guys pulled a six spell operation instead of a nine spell operation? And you sort of touched on that.
So
that's a big change.
Well, I mean, there are six level spellcasters in Pathfinder, so we know really well how much extra stuff you can pour on a six level spellcasters, right? Inquisitors just have more neat options than clerics. Magi have more neat options than wizards. Since we get to rebalance the entire game, we can say, is there any ninth level or eighth level or seventh level spell we have to have? And if there is, we can make that a fifth level or sixth level spell for the people with six level progressions. So it enters the game at roughly the same character level. It's just, you know, if you look at Inquisitors and Magi, they sometimes have spells several levels lower than a wizard gets the same spell. There are some spells that we don't have in the game because we don't need them. We're trying to cram into a single rulebook, the entire core rulebook, an entire source book for at the very least a solar system and arguably an entire galaxy, and an entire new combat system for starships. Six-level spellcasters don't need as many spells as nine-level spellcasters. So between wanting these classes to have more interesting options and wanting to rebalance everything so maybe you don't even need nine-level casters, and wanting to build effective casters without having to have as big a number of spells, six-level casters made more sense to us when we were at that stage of the design.
And I just want to throw in like a little tease in here, too. Wish and Miracle are in the game, but they act a little... How you get them and cast them is a little different, and that's all I'm going to say about it.
But also because Wish and Miracle are in there, there's nothing that is possible...
Nothing possible in Pathfinder. Nothing else you can do Wish or Miracle to get that.
When we were talking about these classes, Rob was like, I gotta have Wish in the game. I don't want to have to tell stories and say someone built a giant machine that alters reality. I just want to be able to say a wish caused this. I was like, okay, good.
I don't even need to say it because, you know, if nothing else...
Wish could, right, exactly. Good. You're moderating. Pick who speaks.
Okay. Well, before we do questions, well, everybody really wants to, maybe we should just do that. Do you have something you want to share about a really interesting...
Yeah, super, real super quick, I'll share my thing.
And then we'll go to questions.
The thing that I think is kind of good and neat is that for all the classes that got grit or key or panache and whatnot, we just sort of put all those in one big pot and said, called it resolve points, and everybody gets them, and they all do basically the same thing. Classes you might have to spend to do a fancy thing, a spell might have to spend a resolve point to do a fancy thing, and then we sort of added on this bit where like it basically also helps you from dying, and then the resolve point to get your stamina back, which is another thing if you don't know about, you'll figure it, and those of you who don't know the difference, you'll hear about
it. We'll get to that in a minute.
But yeah, all that is, I think, a good change that we made.
I'll do an even briefer difference that I like. Magic Missile is still in Starfinder. You cast Magic Missile, you get two missiles. If you cast Magic Missile as a full action, you get three missiles. And so it doesn't scale up with level, but depending on how you cast it, depends on how your Magic Missile works.
And that was all part of that whole math rebalancing I was talking about.
Yeah. All right, so now we can go to questions. I went through there. Let's go right here.
In a setting that has holy plasma cannons.
Yes.
How did you make melee interesting? Why would someone pick up a piece of stick and hit people?
All right, so there are a couple of answers about that. One of them is the awesome factor. If you think of almost any popular science fiction setting, there is some special group that have a special melee weapon that they love. We have lightsabers in Star Wars. Klingons have their bat'leths. If you go to Andromeda, they had the... what was it, shock lance? Whatever the guard had. So that exists for everything. There are would anyone else like to answer any of these questions? No?
There are
still attacks of opportunity in the game. Only three things provoke: leaving a threatened square, and you only threaten with a melee weapon, making a ranged attack, or casting a spell unless the spell says otherwise, and all of our touch range heal spells say they don't provoke. But that does mean that one of the things that is useful is if you have maximized your melee options, you can leap the heck up, get next to people, and if they start shooting, you hit them again. So you end up getting more attacks out of it. We also have special abilities, right? So soldiers get gear boosts, for example, which they pick a category of gear several times as they go up in level and get extra damage with it or get extra options. One of them is melee striker. You get to add half your strength modifier onto all melee attacks again.
Mask hits you with the holy melee cannon.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, or you can also get the holy plasma sword if you happen to be into that. We have built a number of special abilities that key off melee separately from keying off ranged. The other thing is, at third level, it is not that difficult to get jump jets that allow you to fly 30 feet as long as you land at the end. There are the blitz soldier type gets plus 10 feet to their movement rate. By fifth level, you can have a jetpack bolted onto your armor. Mobility is not as restricted as it was in Pathfinder. In Pathfinder, a big part of the game is, how do I get up there to do something? In Starfinder, the answer is you fly through the air like a screaming banshee holding a plasma dashko over your head and do death from above.
That being said, though, most characters are better at ranged combat than melee combat. The Solarian and the Soldier are really the two. Although I ran two Starfinder games this weekend from the AP, and like the operative, in both games, pulled out their survival knife and was like and doing really well with it. So you know, it's like the situation called for it. They couldn't get away. They only had a gun in their hand. They were fighting a melee combatant. It's like, well, I guess I'll draw my knife and stab. Natural 20. I got a critical, and you know, it actually, everyone's really surprised. It's like the knife was what.
Yeah.
Situation.
The other thing is that weapons scale so that when you're 5th level, 6th level, 7th level, you can buy a better tactical knife, right? Like a monomolecular adamantine knife or a rack blade that has been infused with the power of damage or whatever. So it's not like you're going, okay, at this point I must buy a plasma cannon in order to be able to stay on the damage curve. We give you those options. Knives are also less likely to be vulnerable to attacks that screw with technology. They are literally tagged analog. I had the same experience that I had an operative who's like, so my laser gun's loud, right? Yeah. My sonic cannon, yeah, it's really loud. How about my knife? No, that's pretty quiet. Great. I sneak up on him. I make a trick attack. I stab him. Oh, hey, I crit him and I killed him. So the operative was able to sneak over, kill a guard, bury his body, and move on to the next guard. That would have been much harder.
All in one round?
No, but while not all in one round, but all in one moment while every other player was trying to figure out what to do as they convinced. But so it is very, very easy to make an effective ranged combatant. By a laser, you are now an effective ranged combatant. If you want to be a melee combatant, there are lots of options that only work with melee and ways to make melee effective. It does have some advantages.
In the back there.
Is the feat system similar to Pathfinder? Because like in Pathfinder, becoming an effective melee combatant involves a very feat-intensive build. Is that similar or different in Starfinder?
I wouldn't say you need feats to be better in melee. There are fewer feats.
Sorry, I missed one. For ranged.
Oh, for ranged. There are fewer feats in Starfinder than in Pathfinder.
There is no precise shot. It's not needed.
Yeah, that's first. Yeah, so
I'm just good at shooting them. I'm good at shooting.
Everyone's good at shooting now.
There's no multi-fire rapid shot or multi-shot because we simply have the ranged weapon damage scale the same as everything else. So you don't need point blank shot. You don't need precise shot. You don't need rapid fire. You don't need
many shot.
Right, and a lot of those things do not exist. So when you take your first feat or two, those things are already having a active change in how your character does stuff. I wanted to get that one example in there for precision. You were talking. I interrupted you. I apologize.
Yeah, okay, cool.
This is what it's like every day.
Yeah, this is what it's
They're
like
so every day. They're so polite to each other every day.
Every day.
So ship battles are tedious and like a niche love in Pathfinder. I know that they're very different in Starfinder, but we haven't hit anything, so I'd love to know more about that.
Hey. So what we do, what we've done with the spaced combat system is that when you get on a ship, you pick a role. There are like five roles, and you can just be some doubling up. But you can only have one captain. And during the combat, everyone's going to have something to do. And we act in sort of like, you don't have to worry about like how fast you are in regular face-to-face combat. It's like all the engineers act at once, all the pilots happen at the same time, all the gun shooting happens at the same time. Captain can step in anywhere and be like, do better, you're doing great, and give bonuses and stuff like that. But so it we've made it a concerted effort to make sure everyone has something to do. It is, you know, hex-based, movement is very important, facing is important. Know where your good guns are and where your shields have been shot at.
Are players in the same ship, or is it like, this is my ship, this players, is your ship?
The core conceit is everyone is aboard the same ship.
Okay.
There is technically nothing stopping you from being in a bunch of TIE fighters. The GM would just have to basically sort of compensate for the fact that the amount of build points you would get for your one ship is sort of spread out between five other ships, right? And then you're thrown against you is just going to have to be a little easier.
So it's Serenity, not
X-Wings. It's more Serenity, less X-Wing, exactly. Although you will have maybe against you a TIE fighter type, whether it's like in the thing that the demo that I keep running, it's two goblins in a junk ship and they're just fighting over the guns all the time. I'm going to shoot. They're just crammed in a single pilot space. And all that being said, and again, I sort of said this before, and maybe this is not so great marketing, you can lift that out of the game and not necessarily use it. I think you'd be missing out on a lot of fun, interesting stuff, but it's not, you don't have to worry about, like, I've got to take a bunch of feats to be a good space fighter. It's all built in. Basically, it's all sort of based, it's based around your skills. So if you've put points into being a good pilot, you're a good pilot. If you've put points into being good at computers for other bits, you're also a good science officer. Engineering.
It's kind of designed as like a mini game.
Yeah.
It's kind of is separate. I mean, it still uses your characters, but it kind of uses separate. There's a character sheet for your ship, and when you need that. But as Jason said, I mean, you could easily run an entire Starfinder game that takes place on a planet, on one planet, you know, and you never get onto a starship. But
you know, if you wanted to run a game
to do that,
if you wanted to run a game that was exclusively based on running around in shadows.
What would that be called?
Sure, I presume it would be called
Shade Jogger?
Yeah, Shade Jogger is perfect. And the other thing is, when we're talking about what you can do in Starship Combat, when you look at Pathfinder, the core rulebook has no archetypes. That's an important part of the game that came along later. The mounted combat explanations and options in the Pathfinder core rulebook are pretty thin. We had to cram a lot into one book. We have a fully functional Starship system, but it does have a conceit that we are assuming you are on the Millennium Falcon or a Firefly-class ship or any of those, rather than assuming that you are a squad of X-Wing pilots. I am sure we will be expanding that because there are people that are desperate to play heroes that are a squad of X-Wing pilots. The core system will be able to handle that. The guidance and the options to make that robust will come later.
Right here.
It's possible to be a co-pilot, like a Chewbacca to the Han Solo.
We have there is only one pilot. Like you can only have one person steering the ship simultaneously.
At a time.
Right. But if, for instance, the pilot is suddenly wants to go down there and get on the gunner like Han Solo does, Chewbacca, who may be the second best pilot, can step into the pilot role during combat and take over.
Yeah, and I would normally assume, looking at them, given that Chewbacca does everything except fly the ship. So he is having to be a gunner most of the time. Then he hops over to be the engineer when he has to. And then he hops over to be the science officer when he's trying to tell him that there's no moon. And Han Solo is the bully who just only makes pilot checks because that's fun until he gets bored and decides to jump on a quad laser. Chewbacca has plenty to do and is the co-pilot because he's navigating, he's doing engineering, he's making the computer's checks for the sensors, he's doing all the stuff other than pulling the yoke back and forth.
That's also, though, because he's got big paws, and when he does that, he hits, like, five things.
Yeah.
He has to go and, like, fix all the things, because he's like, turn the radio on. Radio, air conditioning, lasers. Yeah.
And
that's my headcanon.
And
what
we fired a concussion missile.
Every time Chewie hits the thing. All right, in the front here.
Pathfinder is basically a mod of a game that was made by another company, like, 20 years ago, if not more at this point.
17, thank you very much. I was there.
Careful.
I'm not old enough for it to have been 20, quite.
Let me get the question out.
Sorry.
Fair enough. So I imagine that, like, when you guys are designing Pathfinder, you felt constrained by certain parts of the rule set, like monks. And I'm just... I'm wondering, what parts of the Pathfinder were you most excited to kind of throw out for making this new system?
Well, it's interesting because we were trying to toe the line. We wanted to be backwards compatible to some extent, you know, to be able to bring Pathfinder monsters and stuff in, still using the core system, but we did have... or a lot of the pieces of the core system. But because we were making a new game, we could kind of look at each thing individually. I don't know if there's anything I was particularly excited to get rid of. I do know we did try to get rid of some things, and then we realized that like 20 other things were connected to it, and that then the whole house of cards fell down. So we're like, well, I guess we need to put that back in there and tie those things back on. So I took that answer, but I don't really have a good answer.
I think one of the
things... Was there something you were excited about?
Owen already mentioned it, basically, but the fact that we have winnowed down the number of things to provoke attacks of opportunity, I think, is pretty exciting. People seem to be pretty... I can stand up without getting smacked again? Yay! So...
I do know something now, but...
Okay,
but you can go ahead.
No, you first.
So the monster design system is different in Starfinder, and particularly, I worked on a lot of the Pathfinder Adventure Path. I'm working on the Starfinder Adventure Path now. Making up NPCs, you have to make them all up like a whole character and add in all this stuff. NPCs in Starfinder are much more like monsters, and the system for creating them is a lot simpler. So as a GM, if you want to have a Solarian do something, you don't have to build that up from scratch level by level. We have graphs that you add on. So you kind of take the base creature and like, all right, I'm going to slap Solarian on there. And it's designed to basically give you the class abilities to that monster or to that person that they're going to use in combat. And they don't need every single little thing that a PC would have to build. So it makes building monsters and NPCs a lot easier. And, you know, from the... It's kind of the secret, because the players, it doesn't feel any different to the players. You say, this is a Solarian, this is a soldier, this is a mechanic. It's just a simplified version for the GM to run. That doesn't need to have all the full bells and whistles that a player character has.
You can use that system to create an effective, balanced Starfinder monster 2 minutes from concept to finish. I have done it multiple times this weekend. I've got the geekiest answer. I was the most excited to be able to challenge the answers to how do you get the core numbers we require. In Pathfinder... If you do not end up with a cloak of resistance by a certain level, you are no longer hitting the numbers that we assume you need to have to not be getting overwhelmed by failed saving throws, for example. That means that a fair amount of your money and your treasure and your options have to be poured into, I have a +3 and I need a +5. I'm a +5 now. That's so exciting. Certainly, people can get really excited when they're like, I'm supposed to be a +5, and I've managed to get a +14. That's exciting, but causes a totally different problem. I don't want this game to ever feel antiseptic and math-driven, but where we could say, hey, what if the way you raised your ability scores over the course of your career compensated for the need to always have so much resistance bonus to everything? And then you can take that time and effort in looking through the books that would have been a cloak of resistance, and instead, maybe you end up getting a holographic Haro deck, right? Maybe you end up getting a computer that has an artificial personality that the GM decides talks back to you all the time. You can take those mental resources of the player and monetary and space resources of the character and use them to make you more interesting with more options rather than more numbers. We end up with the numbers in extremely similar places all on purpose. We know how that math works. There are places where we're like, let's look at what skill DCs should actually be for the skill checks we have so that we get a percentage of success based on how much effort you put into it that seems reasonable. And if it turns out that a dragon has an unreasonably high or unreasonably low appraise check compared to players, that will mostly not make it difficult to update them, right? How often does that actually come into play? And since we give you accurate skill numbers, if you are converting a monster and it seems way off, you can just look at our Starfinder monster creation rules and say, well, I'm just going to switch it from a +408 to a +12 because that makes more sense.
There's also no appraise skill.
Yeah, there is also no appraise skill. But
we simplified skills quite
100% true and relevant. But for me, it was the ability to say, rather than what do we inherit that we must duplicate, it was what do we have to have and how can we get there with the least load on the cognitive abilities of players and GM, and so that the fewest options are dull.
In the middle.
So you've touched on backwards compatibility for monsters. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about backwards compatibility for PCs, or if that's like not really a thing.
My hope is that if you can convert from 3.0 to Pathfinder, that you can convert from Pathfinder to Starfinder. It is a similar case of, for instance, if you've got a 3.0 character, there are no notes for your combat maneuver bonus or combat maneuver defense. So you look at Pathfinder and see where those rules come from. The only place where that can cause a problem for that conversion is if your 3.0 character is a class that doesn't exist in Pathfinder, it won't have class features or spells designed to assist with those things. So if you found that a problem, you go, well, here's a different class's class feature that solves that, we'll bolt it on. So it's very, very similar, right? It is not hard to say, hey, I'm playing a paladin, so instead of being plus 15, plus 10, plus 5, I'm just at plus 15, and I'll use the tactical rules chapter. We have a chapter, which we spent a lot of time on, called Legacy. We give you fully written up Starfinder versions of all of the races, core races for Pathfinder. So you can play a dwarf or an elf or a half-orc just by saying, this is my race, instead of saying it's a Shirin or a Isoki or an android. For the classes, you are going to have to do some conversion work. If that phrase doesn't scare you, I don't foresee it being a problem.
Yeah, we give you some rough guidelines on some of the more problematic bits that might need to be converted, but for the most part, it's just like, good luck! You can do it! We believe in you!
Also, let's be honest, within weeks of it being released, I'm sure third-party publishers, some of which might also be Paizo employees, will probably start looking at if it makes sense to release products that do that conversion work for you. Those would not be available to Starfinder Society.
Starfinder has new shinies.
Right.
Yeah. I'm going to play with the new shinies.
One of the things that Sutter has said is, if you want to play a paladin, we hope you will find it satisfying to play a soldier that takes the arcane assailant specialization, giving you some supernatural abilities, and the priest theme, which means that you've got connections to a church and a deity. And if that's maybe not quite enough spellcasting for you, you can spend some of your feats, since you've got a bunch of feats as a soldier, and you don't need 8 of them for ranged combat. You can take some of your feats and decide, okay, I'm psychic, since magic is magic in Starfinder, it doesn't make any difference. And I have a connection inkling, and I maybe have a technomancer spell known. And so you can take that idea, I am a holy warrior of Iomedae. We have Iomedae, we have holy, we have warriors. So you put up different ingredients in, but it's still an omelet.
Cool. There.
Actually, I don't know how you had the ability to read my mind, but the question I was going to ask was the one that you had just finished answering. It was the paper doll problem. Thank you.
Do you have a question?
Yeah, actually kind of rides on that, too. I know Starfinder is being more, you know, focused on, like, going to have firepower and things like that of guns. Say you wanted to have, though, like, you were used to being ranger and you wanted to have something, like, a bow that fit in that universe.
We have bows.
Anything like that? Oh, well, cool.
I love
that. Do you have a holy plasma arrow?
We have grenade arrows.
Yeah, you in fact literally can have a holy plasma arrow, because one of the options are you can have an arrow that does the effect of a grenade 5 levels lower. Which means instead of having to go ching lob once, you can have a whole quiver full and just and they blow up or whatever. So we know you all love rangers. And Chewbacca has a crossbow, right? I'm aware it's a bolt caster, but there's a long tradition in science fantasy of, let's say, laser swords, bolt casters. I don't remember what it was, but there's at least one anime out there with someone that has a sling that's just lobbing grenades with a sling, right? We want to, again, we can only cram so much into one book. I'm sure that as we go on, we will figure out what the grenade, sling a deer, halfling options are at some point.
Let's see, back there?
Yeah. You touched on it, but I wanted to speak a little more. Divine, arcane, and presumably psychic magic,
yep.
Or it's just magic.
Yep.
It was magic.
Yeah, speak more on that. I mean, how does that affect the various aspects of the game? How does that work?
I mean, it's primarily because we don't have clerics and wizards. We decided that there wasn't really a point to, I mean, and part of that is going down to the 6th level casting, because technology has, in some cases, replace. I mean, you don't need somebody to cast light if you can flip a switch or have a flashlight. And so it's still very common, but we don't, there didn't really seem to be a reason to have that distinction. And part of that
is we also got rid of all the components for magical casting.
There's no physical
somatic,
material.
It's just you cast a spell. And so we do have different spell lists. We have two casters in the core book, the Mystic and the Technomancer. They have different spell lists. There is some overlap. They do get some of the same spells, but the Mystic tends to be more things that focus with, like, biological or mental things, and the Technomancer tends to be, like, well, more flashy stuff, kind of dealing with messing with reality or something, maybe more traditional magic. So there just didn't really seem to be much of a reason to have that. Another thing is we have the Mystic that gets their powers from a connection. They choose a connection. It's a similarity might be to sort of the Oracle Mysteries. They can come from gods. A lot of them do come from gods, but not all of them come from gods. So you could have a Mystic that is, I don't know, really is into black holes or something, and one day got too close and stared inside it and has, not too close because he wouldn't have been sucked in, but you know, close enough looking in. I don't know, maybe some alien entity did that. Well, you can't have some Mystics that have divine magic and some Mystics that don't have divine magic, because, and it's kind of left to the individual player, you know, where do I want my powers to come from?
Magical force. Interesting. Yeah, we could investigate something like a magical force. Game mechanically, there are like 7 options over 10,000 pages of Pathfinder that care what kind of magic it is, right? Like there are a couple of races that +2 to saves against divine spells. So we are giving up those 5 things out of 10,000 options. And in return, people just don't have to worry about it. So if you decide I'm playing a Mystic and my Mystic connect, and I'm playing an Android Mystic, and my Mystic connection is to the souls of every entity that possessed this body prior to me, is that arcane because it's all technologically driven? Is that divine because they're all dead? Is that psychic because some of their energy remains within this body? I don't know, but now that I've said it, I suddenly want to play one, right? So that doesn't make a big game difference, so at that point carrying it forward is just another page of description of why these things are different, even though they don't make a difference, forcing players to only play a character one way when the game doesn't need them to only play it one way.
I find that the mechanical combat in Pathfinder, a lot of it's a lot like a resource management game. You've got 5 encounters in your day that you want to get through as effectively as possible so that your group doesn't die, and then you don't spend a lot of resources, so you have more money to buy gold at the end of the day. Is that kind of game balance there in Starfinder, or do you have a different philosophy for the adventuring day, I guess I would say?
Well, the biggest change in that is the use of stamina. So if any of you have had a chance to play in the Delves or in the games, you don't have just hit points now, you have stamina points and hit points. Stamina points are kind of like, you know, your energy level, your will to fight. Hit points are actually your health. And so you can take a 10-minute rest, spend one of your resolve points, which Jason had mentioned, and that gives you all your stamina points back. So that's a way to sort of keep people. It's like, all right, we're taking a lot of damage and everything, but we can take a quick break, use up one of our another resource, but that keeps us in the fight longer. I mean, obviously, spellcasters are still going to have to match with their spells, but of course, they also have laser guns, too. So just because you're out of spells doesn't mean you're out of combat. So we did try to extend that a little bit, I think.
A whole lot more things are tied to that rest that are tied to uses per day or or even resolve points. So the roughly half of your ability to soak damage is stamina, and all damage goes to stamina and before it goes to hit points, except for some weird magical options, and the other half is hit points. So you take your stamina first. If you all take roughly half or less than your damage in an encounter, you can, at the end of that encounter, take 10 minutes, each burn one resolve point, and get it all back. You've not at that point had to cast any spells, you haven't had to do any channeling, you haven't had to use any healing serums, you're good to go. And everyone's using the same resource for that, so since your numbers will be roughly similar, they vary some, you know, your soldier and your technomancer and your mechanic are all at the same time going, well, we seem to have a similar flow in things. That also means that your mystic, if your mystic decides to be a healing mystic, since they're all spontaneous spellcasters, if he doesn't need to heal people, he can just do other interesting things with those slots. It is true that eventually you're battery on your laser might run down, but batteries are cheap, and you can recharge them when you're back at your starship or at any major city. So it seems so far like people all tend to feel that we are going through resources at a similar rate. We're all good, we're all good, we're all good, we're getting a little nervous. There are some abilities that an envoy can do, right, that like boost someone, and the envoy can try that all they want. The recipient can only receive it once per time they've stopped and taken that 10-minute break and burned a resolve point. So the envoy never finds himself going, well, if we get into another fight, I can't help you all. It's just, have we all taken that break? And if we have, then my whole suite of those powers is ready again.
Let's see, right there.
I heard a lot of things about modern weapons. How does Starfinder differ in crafting with Pathfinder?
This is, I'll begin. This is a lot of Owen's baby, though. But we have vastly simplified the crafting, right? So we have a generic kind of
universal polymer base.
Yeah, they're universal.
UVBs.
UVBs, which are just like sticks of stuff that can be modded and turned into different things. And essentially, as long as you have enough of those UPV values equal to the value of the item that you want to craft and have a number of ranks equal to the item level, you do it. You don't have to roll anything and do progress over a certain amount. You have to take time to do it, obviously. And I can't remember what the prog... Is it just one... Can you just... Per day? Build a thing? Or is
I think it's 8 hours build a thing, but you...
Well, yeah, that we have.
But he has the book.
The advantage of crafting in Starfinder is not that you get it cheaper, because you need to pay the full value. The advantage is you don't have to find. What is the main advantage actually?
Yeah, you get what you want.
The main advantages are the following. I can build exactly what I need instead of having to fly back to a major port and do it. Anything I build, I can repair more easily and more quickly than anything I bought off the shelf. Anything I build is slightly tougher in terms of hardness and hit points than anything I buy off the shelf. The assumption of the game is that if you go and buy a plasma cannon, then that is plasma cannon serial number 474645B1, one of a lot of 50 million that Abadar Corp built in a vast factory and shipped throughout the galaxy. So they are mass-produced, and they have that economy of scale, so they can make a profit, because if they make 50 million of something, it doesn't cost them as much. When you craft, you are sitting at your bench, and you are making one. And if you have ever, for instance, watched a gunsmith make one pistol, starting with a block of aluminum, and you can get a custom weapon that way, but it is not as fast or efficient as the mass-produced. That does mean our starship has crash-landed on a planet. We are all, we called ourselves the adventurers, the ice warriors. It's an Arctic planet, and everything here is immune to cold. Before we go out, I'm going to take some UPBs, and I'm going to make us a flamethrower. That seems like it might be useful. We don't have the option to run someplace. And the main reason this works is, if you have ranks in engineering, you can make all technological items. If you have ranks in mysticism, you can make all magical items. You can make items that have an item level, because all items have an item level, equal to your ranks. So if I'm a 5th level character and I have 5 ranks, I can make any 5th level or less item. I am not spending feats to be able to do that. I am not... And UPBs, one credit worth of constructing unit is worth 1 credit. So I can carry 2,000 credits of UPBs with me. I can build anything that has a cost of 2,000 or less using them. And if I end up not doing that, I can just sell them for 2,000 credits. In fact, it is a UPB-based economy. A credit is... One credit gets you one UPB. If you happen to use that credit for food, that's fine. But instead of being based on old gold or oil or whatever else, it's based on what a UPB is worth. So crafting is vastly simplified. You don't have to spend any of your character resources. But it also means that your character wealth is never skewed by it. Right now, if you decide as a first level human wizard, I'm going to spend everything I can on crafting feats.
Pathfinder.
Yeah, in Pathfinder. In Pathfinder, when I said right now. If you do that, then at first level you are not nearly as effective as the first level wizard that cast it all on doing spell stuff, because you can barely craft, you have almost no money, and you can mostly craft consumables. Take those two characters and make them 20th level, and one of them has twice as much magic stuff now. So suddenly, he has a whole lot more options because his wealth per level is way off. So, this, so far, seems to fix all of those problems. And do let me look at time.
Base time of 4 hours.
Base time of 4 hours. So, basically speaking, it takes 4 hours to make a thing. If you're 19th level and you're making a 19th level gun, it takes base time 4 hours.
If you're high enough and it's a much lower level item, it'll go quicker, basically.
Can you speak in some detail about the difference between making a character in Pathfinder versus Starfinder, and what all goes into it as far as stamina points, hit points, ability scores? How is it different?
You don't roll for hit points.
You don't roll for hit points or stamina points or resolve points,
yep.
for that matter. Those are determined by your race and your class and your
constitution.
In the case of stamina, for your resolve points, it's determined by your key ability score. Every class has a key ability score. Basic concept: a wizard would have intelligence as their key ability score, but every class has one of those, so that affects your resolve and other things. The point buy system, we have a completely different system for buying ability scores now. That is kind of allows, I guess,
it's with the point buy system. Yeah, everything is one for one, but you're capped at an 18. So you don't ever have to look at a chart. If I'm building my character starts with a 10 and I get +2 to something for my race and I want a 14, I spend 2 of my character points. That goes from a 12 to a 14. I just can't buy over an 18, and you can't sell down.
It doesn't scale up in cost.
Yeah. Right. And then every time you gain a level, not gain a level, every time you gain 4 levels when your ability scores go up, you get to pick 4 ability scores that increase. If that ability score is a 16 or less, it goes up by 2. If it is a 17 or higher, it only goes up by 1. This is one of the reasons why we tackled the Christmas tree question. I'm a soldier. I've hit 4th level. I want to buy up my ability score. So I'm going to buy up my strength. I'm going to buy up my dex. Even if I'm already at 18, so I'll take that 19 because I want to hit those 20s. And I get 2 more, and probably all of those are a 16 or less. If I'm annoyed by my will save and my perception, and I'll just go ahead and buy up my wisdom, get +2, and everything goes up by 1. And then, you know what? I've been giving a lot of orders as my soldier. I'll go ahead and buy up my charisma by 2 just for my intimidate check. At 8th level, that all happens again. Which means you can end up with characters like, you know what? I don't need 18s. I've seen the math, but I would love to have a bunch of 16s. So you have many fewer of those characters that are like, my fortitude save is +27 and my will save is +5.
Oh, thank God.
We do have a piece of equipment that brings up your lowest saving throw by an amount. So that if your character is going, I keep failing reflex saves, and it's my worst option, we give you an option to buy that up, but unlike the Christmas tree effect, you don't feel like if I don't buy a cloak of resistance, I am going to die. Or worse, if I don't buy a cloak of resistance, I'm going to get mentally dominated and he'll die. So that entire thought process is different. Now, it is important to note that you can roll for your ability scores. We don't require you to use point buy. If you are an old school grognard and you desperately want to see what you get when you roll 4d6, pick the best 3 in the ranges you want, it's in there. Prego. He's in there. But for making those choices, you don't have to look at a chart, the change doesn't scale, and if you didn't buy something up early on, it is much easier to increase it as your character goes up in levels.
Here's the thing that's also different. When you pick a race, they're very similar to the Pathfinder races. A +2 in one thing, +2 in one thing, -2 in a third thing. Humans get that +2 to go wherever. But then you add those before you start spending your points. But then you also pick a theme. Each theme gives you +1 in one stat, and some other stuff that
base pilot, for instance,
plus one dex, and it gives you a first level power that is mostly focused around sort of knowing stuff about that's important to your theme, and then at 6, 12 something like
yep.
that. Every
6, 12, 18.
6, 12, 18. So over the course of your career,
we've consolidated the skills, but you still get skill points. You still get feats.
At first level, you get 1,000 credits, no matter what class you are, and there's no rolling.
That's true. Yeah. So, but the main thing I think is with the hit points and stamina points, and I think
The race will give you like 2 hit points, 4 hit points, and then the class will give you another hit point. So every race and class that is the same and has the same constitution will basically have the same amount of hit points, stamina points, resolve points, but differences will vary between race and class.
So, other than like talking about like the holy pistol and stuff, alignment hasn't really been brought up much. And divine stuff, you know, there's no different, you know, divine is just magic, you know, magic is magic. Is it that alignment is not there, or that it's less of a thing in the world?
Very much the latter.
Yeah.
It is less of a thing, yeah.
It is less of a thing, it is there. For example, the holy fusion, and a fusion is when you put a magical property onto a weapon. We decided to come up with a word with that instead of saying the holy special magical weapon property. So the holy fusion allows you to bypass the DR and energy resistance of evil outsiders and dragons, because those critters are supernaturally evil. It has no effect on an evil guy. It is still your holy canon, but he is simply not supernaturally evil. He's just a bad person. The alignments are there, but in part because we want to tell science fiction-y stories, which are frequently less about that stuff, and in part because Sutter is our brand manager and he loves controversy, and in part because if you can detect evil at first level, even though it's not true, a lot of people think that means every town should have a cleric standing up front detecting evil and refusing passage to anyone that comes through detecting as evil, even though those will only be high-level characters and undead. For those reasons... Oh, and Holy also bypasses undead. Sorry, that's the other supernatural evil group. For those reasons, it is much more drawn back. But it's there, it happens, the subtypes are relevant, there are things that have DR slash good, but it is much more relevant when you're talking about these supernatural sources of various planes. If there's a Protean, an axiomatic weapon is still a great choice.
Yeah, like, the planes still have alignments, the planes still exist, so, you know, hell is still lawful evil, and so we still need to have alignment.
So in the case of, like, the holy weapon, it's the evil subtype.
And it doesn't say the evil subtype, because you could have the evil subtype on something that isn't an outsider,
right,
undead, or dragon, but yeah.
In concept.
Yes.
You just mentioned the planes are still there. The other day I heard how Star Travel works. But one of my players last night came up with the concept of cheating up faster than life by using the planes. Tell me it ain't so.
Well, there are some... We've announced some of the gods. So that's the sort of traditional. If you're buying a starship out of the dealer's lot or whatever, it has a drift engine that takes you through the drift. There are organizations, particularly faith-based organizations, that have their own ships, and they may have some proprietary technology that they use. But it's proprietary because you don't want, if you have a planar drive, you don't want a whole bunch of, like, devils from hell getting that and plane shifting to heaven and attacking you. You want that technology for yourself. So,
but if you're the Church of Zonkathon and you've known for a long time that you can shift to the plane of shadow and walk someplace and it's faster, and you now have a starship, I like the idea of a shadow.
So for the moment, we've kind of hinted at the existence of other things that other groups use, but by far the most common thing is going through the drift, which can only be accessed through technology.
There are giant riding geckos in Pathfinder's equipment guide. That doesn't mean that most people aren't riding horses.
Plane shift, I believe, is still a spell, a high-level spell. So, like,
your
player gets up to be plane shift, you can plane shift and do it that way, too.
But at that level, you're also looking at interplanetary teleport.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. We've only got a couple minutes left here, so...
Is there anyone who has not gotten to ask a question who would like to ask a question?
Right.
Some of the higher level adventure paths in Pathfinder have a lot of combats that seem purely for the purpose of giving you XP. It just makes those real slogs to finish. Have you guys thought about doing something different?
Well, you still need to get... We still have XP, so we haven't really significantly done away with that. I mean, combat has changed quite a bit, just in terms of going from more melee focus to ranged focus. In the adventure paths, I just talked about this earlier this morning, they're a little bit shorter, so they're not even going up as high at this point. So I can't think of anything like specifically that we did to offset that.
So far, in my experience, high-level Starfinder fights take between one-half and one-third as long per fight as Pathfinder fights, because there is a lot less decision paralysis, and there are a lot less weird, crunchy options that take 3 minutes for everyone to look up. So in that regard, there is less slogging. we haven't put out our first high-level AP yet, so exactly how we're going to get players' experience is something that we're literally still working on as we go.
But there's lots of things that do tie into that. So, for instance, we talked about the leveled weapons and everything. So pretty much everyone's damage is scaling up over time. So by the time you're 15th level, everyone is using weapons that are dealing more damage. So it's not like you have to nickel and dime. And you're not having people that are taking their six attacks or whatever to get that same amount of damage. It's one attack is doing the damage they need to do for that level. So that helps speed it up.
That's another reason why they're just faster.
Yeah.
Touching on that with the no iterative attacks. Casters. One spell, two, for the full action.
One spell, unless there's ones like Magic Missile, whereas you cast that one spell as a full action. It's usually standard. It's usually standard action, and then you get another.
You get to shoot your laser pistol,
but
whatever.
Yeah. But sometimes there's also something interesting in your class that's a move action. So, for example, the Envoy has Get Him. Get Him allows the Envoy to indicate a target. Him, get him. And until the Envoy's next round, everyone is plus one to get him. That's a move action. So the Envoy can go, get him! And then open fire. So sometimes there are a full round worth of interesting things you can do without just saying, well,
I shoot him twice.
I've got a full round. I don't want to shoot twice because my attack bonus is so crappy. So we try to make sure that action economy works to your favor and you've got stuff you can do.
That was kind of what I was getting at. Thank you.
Back there?
So with the shift from melee to range, I know... I forget where I heard it, but they said that the ACs were done a little bit differently, touch AC and stuff like that. Could you go over how the range...
So basically we've sort of gotten rid of touch AC and flat-footed AC. Flat-foot is a condition that applies to everyone sort of equally. And for those of you who haven't played the Delve yet, you've got EAC, which is your energy armor class, which is your armor class against attacks that do energy damage, fire, cold, sonic, etc. And then you've got your KAC, your kinetic armor class, which is your armor class against attacks that do bludgeoning, piercing. That's your swords and your physical bullets. And that is it.
And your KAC tends to be a little higher, so it's a little harder to hit something with KAC, and KAC weapons tend to do a little more damage. So you get to decide, do I want a laser pistol, which will do a little less damage but I'm more likely to hit, which if you are an envoy who is not focused on dex, that seems like a good call, or you're going to go ahead and focus on KAC. So if you're a soldier that has maxed out your dex and put a optical hard drive for a targeting computer into your head and you want to take the heavy six-barrel machine gun, that might be a better choice for you.
So, with the some of the other changes, it sounds like, well, is there a difference in, like, say, the power structure between mortal realms and the planes? Because technology has brought in things like, hey, we've got these big battle cannons that, yeah, there's Baylor over there, but we've got a capital class starship that is just going to go, hi, Baylor, boom.
It's really hard to target a single Baylor with your capital class weapons, though.
On the other hand, it's easy for a Baylor with greater teleport to teleport onto the bridge of your starship.
Also,
Get enough.
I don't know if they
I'll want to do a little tease here as well. In Alien Archive, thanks to the Mr. F. West Schneider, there is a devil that might, just be at the size of a spaceship.
Yeah, no one said Baylors don't have capital class ships themselves.
Certainly, like, you know, an angel doesn't have to have a flaming sword anymore. An angel can pick up a holy class, can use a holy plasma cannon, and might very well do that.
So a lot of these things are things that, since those are going to be kind of corner cases, we have not extensively covered them in the core rulebook, but when looking at the world, right, in Pathfinder, it turns out there are enclaves of humans living on the surface of the sun. That was thousands of years ago. Some things like that, like, you know, the concepts tend to have things like angels and demons. Demons are frequently based on how you died. If you died by having a starship fall on you, there might be a daemon. It's the daemon of dropping starships on you.
We also, like, because, you know, in Pathfinder we now have six bestiaries, and We're doing a single alien archive right at the beginning now, and we also want to show off a lot of new alien monsters. We know we have a lot of people. I mean, we hopefully get lots of new players too, but we're going to have lots of Pathfinder players, and we just don't want to give you a monster book that's got just Starfinder versions of a whole lot of Pathfinder monsters. So starting off, certainly there's not going to be like a whole bunch of angels and devils and demons statted up.
Because we can do that work ourselves.
Because that's part of the reason for backwards compatibility. So, yeah, if you want to take a Baylor and bring it into your Starfinder game and give it everything you can from Starfinder, you know, and that's, and eventually, hopefully, we'll get to that. But there's always this fine line of, do we want to just reprint a different version of what we've already done, or do we want to do something new?
And
leaning more towards new for the most part.
And when we do do something like update something, there are chromatic dragons in the Alien Archive. We have a stat block, and then there's a graph for what color it is. So there's a single dragon stat block, and here it is blue, and here it is red, and here it is green. That single stat block also assumes that that dragon looked around and went, I like technology. My breath weapon doesn't always cut it. I'm going to put a plasma cannon on my shoulder. That's the dragon we give you. That's the assumed dragon.
We'll do one last question back here. Can we get a...
will the conversion chart for monsters be in the Alien Codex or in the...
Guidelines for how to take an existing stat block and run it in Starfinder is in the core rulebook. How to make a monster from scratch
is in Alien Archive. Yeah.
And that's it.
And that's all we got to say. So thanks for coming out.
So, since I don't have any more, I get to keep this, right?
Thank you for joining us for another edition of the No Direction Podcast PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage, made possible with the help of Justin Sluder and Ryan Hiller of Geek Dad. To find more great Pathfinder audio, go to NoDirectionPodcast.com.